welcome to episode 108 of
Brutal Bottle.
Yeah, that was a under the sea version of Dan's voice.
Yeah, underwater.
You're like Sebastian.
We're going with the seahorse theme again.
Oh, the seahorse. There you go. Okay, I missed it, but now I got it. Thank you for the clarification. We're still sipping on this Mangalitsa Pig Porter from Right Brain because it is a nice porter. So I'm actually kind of upset that we didn't have it be in the pool of potential mystery beers.
Yeah, and it would have been a great, like, mind blow to find out it had pigs in it.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true. So let's not delay. It is hop knowledge. Today we're going with a hop that people probably have heard of. It's the Saaz hop. A lot of people have heard of Saaz. It apparently is a hop that changed the world of brewing forever. It was an esteemed and honored variety that helped to define beer styles such as European lagers and Bohemian pilsners. It's a natural variety from Czechoslovakia that originated from the area around the town of Saaz, which is in Bohemia. It's also grown in Belgium and the United States and has several descendants from New Zealand, including Matueka and Rewaka, which we've had on the show before. It's highly sought after for use in Czech pilsners, lagers, and European and Belgian styles of the same. It has a high level of, I don't even know what that word is, I'm skipping that. It's got a herbal character to it, and comes equipped high and higher content of polyphenols, which subsides the oxidation and aging process in beer, giving it a longer shelf life. That's an actual, like, cool thing to know about that. So Saaz can, like, extend the shelf life of a beer.
Oh, yeah.
Just by the use of that one hop. I think that's pretty cool. I think that's pretty much it for interesting stuff. Obviously, there are tons and tons of beers that are brewed with this, so I'll just pick out a few that people might know. Deschutes Brewery did a Valkyrie Black IPA that featured Saaz hops. And Harpoon Brewery did a Big Bohemian Pilsner that used Saaz hops. So,
well, I think, I mean, maybe I'm wrong because I'm not the biggest know-it-all when it comes to European beer, but if the only beer that I know of that beer style coming out of the Czech Republic is Pilsners, and if Saaz is the big hop for Czech Pilsners,
yeah,
that says something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I said, it changed, you know, the brewing world, so it's a big deal. So, as we continue to sip on our Mangalitsa Pig Porter, let us talk about a topic that I thought about some time ago. I was kind of waiting for the right opportunity to discuss it. And I think, Dan, you always have very interesting insight and very interesting opinions on beer-related things, so I wanted to pose this to you. It seems to me craft beer drinkers have really gotten to a point where they kind of write Samuel Adams off. Adams Brewery. And I know I've talked about it before, like the fact that they still do some really good beers. So I kind of wanted to pose to you, first of all, do you think that that's accurate, that Sam Adams has kind of been written off by the craft beer community, drinker-wise? And if so, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Like, why?
Well, I think that is right, that a large portion of the craft beer community, I don't know if it's conscious or not, but a lot of people do end up just kind of ignoring Sam Adams, and I don't know if that's on purpose or not. I think part of it is that there's a certain prestige in going after the smallest beer. Like, there's a thing about discovering a beer or supporting a small brewery that's really appealing to craft brew drinkers, and Sam Adams is famously America's largest brewery. Right. If you consider that AB InBev is Belgian and Miller Coors is what German or something? But they're no longer American.
I don't know.
They're no longer American. So if like the largest American brewery is Sam Adams. So it's like if you're in a community that really prizes being local, supporting the David against the Goliaths, you know, you're gonna go for the tickers. We always talk about tickers. Yeah. The tickers always want to try the new thing, and people know Sam Adams. It's just mm-hmm. it just seems to be something that's in the background that you realize is there, well, but maybe you're not picking it up.
Also, on the note of, you know, going after what these small breweries are doing, since they are so small, their beer is limited. So you need to hurry up to get it. Yeah. And when there's so many of these small breweries, that's just what you keep getting and getting and getting. People just know that the Sam Adams products will always be there. Not all of them, though, because a lot of people, I think, have become kind of blind to the fact that they're putting out a bunch of, like, smaller batch interesting beers. Like, I had even said, like, one really early episode, I think, like, in the teens of this podcast. You know, we're in the hundreds right now. I think it was one of my episodes in the teens. I had mentioned that the very first Goes beer I ever had was the Sam Adams Verloren, which was a small batch Goes that they made. I had never even heard of the style Goes before. I didn't even know what I was doing. Like, this was like 5 years or more ago.
And did you like it?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I thought it was a very good, interesting beer. And I forgot about it for a little bit and then heard about this whole Goes phenomenon. And then I was like, wait a second, Goes? Like, oh, I had a Goes and it was by Sam Adams and it was really good. And then that got me thinking at that point. I'm like, why do people like write Sam Adams off? Because I feel like that they never come up in conversation. When you're talking about craft beer, Sam Adams barely ever comes up.
Right. I mean, they just had that big commercial campaign maybe like a year ago where they were like asking, you know, really stereotypical looking hipster guys. You know, I swear they went to like a beer garden or something like that.
Yeah.
And
it looked like that's where
they were. They're going after these hipster guys and they're like, how many beers do you think Sam Adams brews? And everyone was saying like, 5, 6. And like, actually it's like 50 or 60 or 70.
It was like 80 some, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just this much, much like magnitudes higher number that they were talking about. And, you know, because they're trying to like reintroduce themselves to what should be their core audience.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it kind of goes back to something that we talked about recently, which was, you know, a large amount of variety coming out of individual breweries. You know, a lot of people probably think that, oh, it's Sam Adams. What are they best known for? They're Boston Lager. So a lot of people who are into craft beer probably just think it's their Boston Lager, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and that is what that commercial showcases.
I wonder if it's also something about, you know, how people use Sam Adams is kind of a transitional beer where,
yes,
they're, you know, they're drinking macro brews or they're drinking crappy beer and then they're like, oh, let me try something different. And then there's Sam Adams, who's like depending on how good your bar is, the one non-macro beer on tap. And so that's the one you try. And then you move beyond it, and then you never look back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that, because I think there is kind of a stigma with Sam Adams is that it is the brewery that bridges the gap between macros and micros. You know, mm-hmm. It brings people into the micro realm, so that when you become big into micros, you don't need to go back to that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think because of that, people don't keep their, well, so to speak, their finger to the pulse of Sam Adams and know that they're coming out with all these smaller batch beers that are good beers. Like, they had like a red IPA that came out. I think it was called like Tasman Red or something like that. That was a good one. We actually had, I think, one of their, either their porter or their stout, one of those in our Brutal Battle Royale tournaments, and it did well. It did well. We were all surprised. We were like, oh my gosh, that's Sam Adams. That's good.
Huh.
I mean, it's a prime example, but I think to me, a little bit of it is the mentality of big is bad is, and small is good within the craft beer community. And people know that Sam Adams is big. And they've been around for a long time. So it's not exciting and new and small.
Right. Yeah, you don't feel like you're being adventurous or novel at all when you're drinking Adams beer. And it's, and honestly, it's not right because it's, this is, they're not as big as the biggest guys. And they're an American company, which is something that, you know, you could choose to value.
Yes.
And they're,
a lot of people do.
And they're putting out plenty of quality product. Now, yep. I admit, I haven't picked up Sam Adams, and I'm trying to think in my bottle shop, where is Sam Adams located? It's because it's not on the big wall, so I think it must be in one of the fridges. But I'm one of those people who it's not on purpose. I accidentally don't pay attention to Sam Adams, yeah. And I swear it's not on purpose. From now on, I'm gonna look for it just to see what's there.
Yeah, and you should. And I would encourage everybody to check out all the smaller batch stuff they have. But some of like the regular stuff, like I had for the longest time not had their honey porter, and then I had it at a beer dinner a few years ago, and I was like, this is a nice beer. Like mm-hmm. It is a nice, solid, solid beer. And I think that one of the biggest issues is that people just start to think of them as being synonymous, like I was saying, like with the Boston Lager, but also with their seasonals that are popular with the non-craft drinkers, but they want to be craft drinkers, people like the Winter Ale, the Oktoberfest, the summer Ale.
Those are the big three. Are the big three.
So they are synonymous with Oktoberfest, Winter Ale, Summer Ale, and Boston Lager. And that's what people think. They're like, those four beers, that's what Sam Adams does.
Actually, I was, I remember.
And the cherry wheat.
I remember I was in a bar, and this cannot be a unique story, but it was the first time I'd seen it. It was like this big wheel for Sam Adams, and it was literally, what season are you in? And it would just like tick over 90 degrees. Now we're in Winter Ale. Tick over 9 degrees. Now we're in Oktoberfest. Tick over another sign of the year. Now we're in Summer Ale. And it was, I'd never seen it before.
That's exactly what they don't want, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's just saying this season equals one beer from Sam Adams.
Right.
You don't want that. So, did they create that?
If
they did, that they're fighting themselves.
Yeah. I mean, what other brewery is like a little bit like this, though, where it's a brewery that people have known forever and is of big size. I mean, no craft beer is as big as Sam Adams because they're the biggest. But what's another one? Like maybe Rogue, maybe Sierra Nevada?
Rogue, Sierra Nevada. Yeah, I mean, they're not as big, but they're big.
Yeah, I mean, did Imbiam Bev buy Rogue?
No. They have not purchased Rogue. No.
I thought that Rogue was bought out.
No.
Okay, my mistake.
AB and Bev bought, from the same state, Elysian and 10 Barrel in Oregon. Rogue is in Oregon, but not one of the ones that got purchased. Okay. So.
But those, Rogue might have the same problem as Sam Adams. Sierra Nevada does not. People still think of Sierra Nevada as like a place that you can get cool stuff. And I swear that Sierra Nevada has like a really treasured, I think it's that whole story about how they were lending hops to fledgling brewers back when there was a hop shortage back in the beginning days. That whole, my brother-in-law, he always has Sierra Nevada Pale Ale specifically because he wants to support Sierra Nevada for that reason.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I think it's awesome too.
Yeah, totally cool. Well, I will say that we can't forget how much Jim Cook, the owner of Sam Adams, did for craft beer.
Right, in general. Yeah, right, exactly. That's what I'm saying, though. Sam Adams has just as much cred as Sierra Nevada does in exactly that same way.
Probably more, honestly.
Right.
Because the other thing is, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Jim Cook tied into his job, it's worked into his job requirements that he, in order to get a bonus, must further the awareness of the craft beer community. Like, he must further the craft beer community in general as part of his job. Not just Sam Adams, but every craft brewer. I mean, it's insane. I mean, how much he's done and how much people start to forget that, it's kind of unsettling because it's this whole thing of the person who innovated and the person who made the path possible to be traveled is the person who's being forgotten so easily. I just feel bad about it. I feel like it's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, but it's our luxury that we're able to take him for granted. And maybe True. We shouldn't take him for... We probably shouldn't take him for granted. But it's in a weird way, it's a legacy to excess that... To his success that we're able to take him for granted.
Yeah. Man, through doing what he did, he's kind of made himself obsolete, which sucks.
Well, I mean, it's not like they went out of business. They're still doing very well.
That's true. That's true. But, you know, where they're trying to go and the point they're trying to make, they're not relevant.
Right. Maybe they're not the tip of the spear, but they're a big part of the body of the spear.
Like... Yeah. They built that damn spear from the ground up. So, yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting to me. And I sit here and I talk about this, and I cannot tell you the last time I bought a Sam Adams, though. So I'm kind of part of the problem because I'm so preoccupied with buying all these other, you know, beers. But at the same time, I'm the issue of I'm a ticker, like we talk about all the time, and I don't buy the beers, repeat purchases from one brewery much at all.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I went to a TGI Fridays, and they had Rebel IPA on tap, and I bought it.
It's a solid IPA.
I drank it, and I liked it. It was good.
It's a solid IPA.
Was it the best IPA I'd ever had? No, but it was perfectly good.
Yeah, I agree. I had had a sample. I think it was a Golden Crust Pizza, which is an awesome place in Red Lion, Pennsylvania. I had a sampler of it with a bunch of other beers, and I was like, that's a good IPA. I like it. I think I liked it more than the Goose Island IPA that they came out with not long ago. 312 IPA? I think is what it was.
312 is a pale ale.
No, they have an IPA and a pale ale, I think, that are 312. Or was it a wheat and a pale ale? I don't know.
The green one's a pale ale, the yellow one's a wheat ale.
Oh, you got it. You're right. I don't know. Whatever the Goose Island IPA was, I did not like it as much as the Rebel. So, I mean, they do good stuff, man. They really do. But anyway, do you have anything else to say on the subject?
The next time I go to my bottle shop, I'm just going to specifically look for Sam Adams and see what they have.
You know what? I think it would be a really good exercise when you can, because I know you may be having a child soon, but for you and I to get together sometime and each bring a few Sam Adams bottles and try them together. And just kind of talk about, on air or not on air, you know, podcast or no podcast, mm-hmm. and just see what we think overall.
Yeah. Or we could split one of their big variety packs.
That too, yep. I just don't want the Boston Lager, or the Boston Ale, or the...
I personally don't like their Oktoberfest.
Yeah, well, I don't like Oktoberfest in general. The Märzen style... Not down with it, really. I used to be, but I've kind of gotten to a point where it's so malty for me now. It doesn't fit my taste buds.
I mean, this is off topic, but I, American Märzens I don't like. German Märzens I do like.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And that's not me being elitist. That's actual trial and error.
It's because of the Rheinheitsgebot.
Well, it's just Germans, they just do solid, good Märzen beers, whereas the Americans try to be
they've been doing it for how long? Yeah, a long time. Right. So they should be good at it.
Right, and it's a beer that's meant to be enjoyed with food, also. So
true, and you did say you like to have your beer with food,
right?
Which is funny because it's the total opposite for me. I like to have my beer by itself, as a dessert, basically. It's its own course.
Right, you can have a beer you can enjoy, ignore with your meal. And then you could have something bolder and whatever afterwards.
Yeah. Cool. Well, good conversation once again. Let's go to the mystery beers that have been sitting in front of us.
Now, this is a rarity in our show. Yeah. By our show, I mean your show. That well, A is
everybody who comes on the show has a part in it. So,
thank you. A is significantly darker than B, which almost never happens.
Yeah, and it's funny because Rebecca put the beers down and she said, "I hope I put these in the right order." So I was like, typically it should be the other way around, but you never know.
Right.
You really never know.
Well, because we want to drink the heavier, the more boldly flavored beer second.
Yep.
Not, which doesn't mean they win, because A, B loses all the time.
Yeah, that's true. So A, to let everyone know, the differences between A and B. A is very, very dark. It looks like a stout or a porter. Can't see through it. Very, very dark on the edges even. Very brown. It's got a nice tan head when you swirl it up. B looks very like deep orange with maybe a little bit of a brown tinge to that orangeness. Very filtered. You can see right through that.
Yeah, it looks like a dark amber.
Yeah, so pretty different. Let's go ahead, start sniffing A. Hoping for some coffee notes.
It smells like a stout.
Sure does. I get some nice, like, dark chocolatey notes. I get some vanilla, actually.
I get some hops, but not a, but like less than I even usually get from.
Yeah,
little hops.
Yeah. Yeah, I do get some though.
Yeah, and there are some like roasted malts, but also just some sweet malts too.
Yeah. Little coffee aspect to it, little roasted coffee aspect.
I would say there's more coffee than chocolate, actually. You mentioned chocolate first.
Yeah. There's almost a little bit of that kind of like beef jerky quality in there, in the nose.
Oh, like a teriyaki or soy sauce taste?
Yeah, kind of. It's not like in your face. It's if I'm really sniffing for a while.
Huh. Yeah, when you swirl it up, you get a lot more of that roast.
But yeah, it just keeps getting like roastier and roastier as you keep swirling.
Right, honestly, it just smells like a standard stout. Like,
yeah. All right, well, let's go ahead and try it and see if it is in fact a standard stout. And you look a little confused.
No, I'm not confused. It's watery.
It's watery.
Like it's. It doesn't have a huge flavor.
It's licorice-y. It's got a little bit of a licorice flavor to it.
Yeah.
What you were talking about the last episode with like a sour finish to it, it has like a sour finish, but not like it's a sour beer or like it's infected or anything, but kind of that sourness of like the wrong combination of sweet maltiness with bitterness.
Right.
That makes it kind of souring. Like, it's kind of like a like sour milk-ish aspect.
And a lot of times we talk about, like, a dry or a tannic-ness to a beer. This gives, like, a cotton mouth.
Yeah, it really does. It's like my tongue is a desert.
Yeah. Like
I don't like this so much.
My tongue rubbing against my mouth feels like it's grating because this beer dried me so much.
Yuck. And I'm when you keep drinking it too, like, I mean, I'm getting some like dark fruit flavor on there, like maybe like some plum, like pruniness.
This is not good.
Yeah, it's super thin, man. But I'm getting some of that roastiness, but it's not good. It's a little like ashtray like.
Yeah, and it I'm getting, like, the front end, I'm just, okay, so the more you drink it, the immediate thing you get is that roast, and then the middle is that sourness, and then the finish is just that cotton mouth. So.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And that, God, that sweetness is, like, that sweetness with the roast and the bitterness just makes it gross.
Yeah. And it's
not like the worst beer I've ever had, but it's also not very good.
No.
So
I'm gonna stop drinking this.
Yeah, I'm it's not worth it to me. Sometimes around the house, Rebecca and I'll say, it's not worth the calories. because we go to the gym and work out, and like sometimes it's actually very counter to what I should be doing, but I go and I work out and then I come home and I have a beer almost immediately. But it, but what I say is it's better than not going to the gym and having a beer, because I would do that anyway.
Yeah. I need to go to the gym more often.
Eh, you know. All right, well, let's sniff on B.
On to hopefully better things. Well, immediately I get citrus, almost grapefruit.
Yeah, and there's a little bit, it's a little dank type smell there.
Yeah, like strong hops.
It's got a spiciness on the nose too, like maybe rye type spiciness. A little cat piss aspect to it,
yeah, that you get a little in bit of that
hoppy beers. Says it should be a hoppy beer, says the smell. There's some grapefruit, right? Did you say grapefruit?
Yeah.
There's some grapefruit.
Well, there's a citrusness to it, and it's more grapefruit than anything else.
Are you having a little bit of problem here talking? You're feeling it, aren't you? Episode 3.
I'm not drunk, but I.
You're not drunk.
I feel nice.
Oh, that's good. Okay, you're in the in between state, the hard buzz, if you will.
Why am I about to drink? You're no longer repulsive and are now like acceptable.
I'm on the scale of, you know, he's all right looking.
He's not awful.
Nice. I get a little bit of like a caramelly finish in the nose that I like with my hoppy beers.
Yeah,
I like more substance. Like, I know a lot of times you get beers that are just like super hoppy and they have like all the citrusy and floral notes, but it's kind of like hop water, and there's not like a whole lot of like malt to hold the beer up and make it a little more viscous. I like all those citrusy and floral notes, but I like there to be like a nice kind of bit of a caramelly malt to back it all up. And that's kind of what this smells like to me. So, bon appetit, as they say when you eat.
So I just took a sip, and a lot of those, that citrusy floriness, unlike that hop, the attractive hops we were talking about in the smell, they're, you don't get them as much in the taste. In the taste, it's a lot more of the, you see a lot more of that bitterness and the sweetness.
Well, it's kind of piney too.
Yeah.
There's a piney aspect, a little bit of that spice that I was talking about that smell like maybe like a rye or something, or maybe it's just like a hop variety that gives off a spice note with a pininess, but there is some citrus to it, but it's more of like a spice and a pininess to it.
Right.
But I'm kind of enjoying it. I kind of like it.
Yeah, it's definitely not bad. That bitterness is much more prevalent in the taste than in the smell.
Yeah. The beer's coming off a little hot, though. Like, hot as in, like, ABV.
Yeah, alcoholic. It's definitely alcoholic.
This has got to be kind of high. This has got to be, I don't know, between 9 and 10%. It might even be smack dab at, like, 9.5%. It's a bit up there. But I kind of like it.
I'm getting some
grassiness in
there. I think I'm enjoying it less than you are. It's not... To me, it's... That bitterness really up front, and then it gives way to like a sweetness that's not being balanced off by the good things we were smelling enough for me. It's not bad, but I was just kind of hoping it would be better based on its smell.
I like it. Even though it's coming off a little hot, like I was saying, I don't know if people can tell, by the way, but I'm starting to get more nasally. I actually think I have a little bit of an allergy to, I'm a little bit allergic to hops, because when I do these shows,
what?
Yeah, when I do these shows, my nose starts to close up on me. So I think that, yeah, and now's like one of the worst times ever, but I am like allergic to grasses, so. No, maybe there's a similarity. I'm just saying. Anyway.
I don't know what to say to that.
These are the things that come up on the show, you know. You just gotta roll with it.
You know you have a beer podcast, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not an allergy podcast. But, I mean, this beer, I'm liking how substantial the malt is. It backs up that pininess, that spiciness. There is a grassiness that I'm starting to pick up in the flavor. There's still a bit of that citrusiness. So I feel like the hoppiness isn't one note. I feel like it's bringing a lot of different things to the table, which yeah. I'm enjoying. And the malt is there to back it all up. It's got a little bit of that kind of malty, roasty sweetness, a little caramelly, kind of nice.
Hmm. No, I mean, it's definitely interesting, and it's bold. I mean,
it's bold. Yes, yeah, it's bold. If you think about the way that a very dark roast of coffee hits your palate,
mm-hmm.
like how like kind of tannic it is and kind of a little bit acrid, but in a good way, and you enjoy it, that's how this beer kind of hits your palate in the same way with all the hops. So, and the heat from the alcohol and the bitterness from the hops.
This alcohol is substantial in this. It is. There's no ignoring this alcohol.
But when you keep drinking it, you get a little more used to it. So it downplays a little bit.
No, I mean, this is a sipping beer. You can't just take big chugs of this thing.
Yeah. If anything, I would say for me, the bitter aspect of it is probably its biggest flaw. As you do keep sipping it, the bitterness is taking over a little bit more and more and more.
Right. And it's also, so, I think it's too heavy.
It is. I mean, it is kind of heavy. It's a little resiny.
Yeah, and it's in its mouthfeel, and it's a lot of that is its sweetness. But you need the sweetness to counteract that bitterness. I kind of wish this whole thing was just kind of dialed back. Like, you know, less bitterness, less sweetness, less mouthfeel. But if you're gonna go amped up like this, you need all those parts to counterbalance each other.
Yeah, I still like it. Getting a lot more grassiness too now with the bitterness that's mm-hmm. lingering around. Good and bad. So it's not a perfect beer, obviously, but it's good. I like it.
Right.
Makes me want to go back to A, and I know this is going to taste terrible.
Well, we disagree a little bit on B, but I recognize that it's definitely interesting. I don't even want to go back to A based on your face.
Dude, just do it for the experience. Just like a small sip.
Okay.
It is nasty. Like, it's not good in comparison, yeah, especially.
It's like bad cold coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Like, when it's been sitting in the cup too long and it starts to taste a little sour.
Yeah, it's got it has like this oiliness to it that's yeah.
Black. Yeah, forget that. Not so hot. Okay. Do you have any ideas where you want to go with ratings?
Well, with A, I'm debating between a 1 and a 2.
I know. Same here.
I mean, it's not horribly offensive, but it is offensive.
Well, since it was recent, to give you a comparison, we each gave the Beast Mode Porter a 2. So,
oh, this is a 1 then. This is a 1.
Okay, so yeah, I'm going to give it a 1 too based on that. It's not good. That's a shitty beer. I'll just say that. Okay, so 2. B. Where do you want to go with B?
I would actually, could you take the lead on this, because I feel like I'm going to mess up. I don't know. I have a wide range now, and I want to be narrowed down by you, and I feel I could take a shot in the dark and be totally off what I want to actually do.
I like it, but that bitterness really, the combination of the bitterness with the alcohol level, if it's even high, but it's tasting like it's high, the alcohol and the bitterness together are kind of really starting to take over my palate as I keep tasting it, and it's getting less and less tasty to me. So I still enjoy aspects of it, so I think I have to go with a 3.
Okay. Just me personally, It's too bitter. It's too sweet. It's too heavy. I mean, but there are a lot of interesting and good flavors if you pick them out individually.
Yeah.
But I just feel like it has some, you know, unignorable flaws. I'm gonna have to get, and but it's not terrible by any means. There's a lot of things in here that I recognize as good. I'm gonna give this a 2.
Okay.
If you caught me on a different day, I could go as high as 3, but today I'm gonna go a 2.
Yeah, I definitely feel like 3 is maxed out for this beer. Like, maxed. You can't do it. Okay, so I want to go with revealing A, the miserable loser of this episode, and just a not at all good beer, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I hope it's not a brewery that I typically like, because I would feel bad, but whatever. That's why we do this blind, because good breweries make bad beer sometimes.
This is the 2015 BCS. That's what this is.
So, A with an overall of 1 is... Oh, God. It's Deep 6.
Weren't you just talking about this beer?
Yes, like last episode or the episode before that. It's by Heavy Seas out of Baltimore, Maryland. I really love this brewery, honestly. They do a lot of good stuff, but this was one of their new offerings. This is... Okay, well, the Deep 6 I thought was the one I incorrectly named. I thought that was going to be their Session IPA. It's not. This is their Robust English-Style Porter. Here's another porter. It's just, it's so thin, man. But then maybe the thing is, I'm just not all that familiar with an English-Style Porter. I'm just familiar with porter, and when I think porter, it's like American.
Well, whenever I often describe something as having an English profile, and what I really mean by that, and not that I'm the authority on this, but when I say English, I mean there's a certain bitter quality that I associate with being English. Like, there's a specific bitterness profile that I associate with being English. Like, when you're talking about ESBs or English IPAs, that they all have this certain profile that's unique to England and not America.
Yeah. I just don't like it. Maybe it's just because I don't like the style. Maybe it's because I just don't like this beer in particular. I don't know, but I don't like Deep 6. It's 6.8% alcohol by volume, just so you know. I like a lot of Heavy Sea stuff. Case in point, the Big Dipper, their oak-aged Imperial IPA, is one of the top beers of this podcast.
Yeah.
So, you know. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that Heavy Seas it's a Maryland favorite. People love it in Maryland. You know,
And rightfully so. Like I was saying, like, I like the brewery. They have a lot of good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is just not one of them. And this is one of their very new offerings. So, you know, maybe it needs to be tweaked. Or like I said, maybe I just don't like the style. And that's my problem. I don't know. Or both of us. Both of our problems. All right, so B, the winner of the episode overall with a 2.5.
The winner.
Is... Oh, man, this is a stubby bottle. It is... Oh, man, Sierra Nevada's Bigfoot Barley Wine Ale. That's got a lot more hops to it than you would assume.
This is a barley wine?
For a barley wine, yeah. It is 9.6% alcohol. Didn't I say between 9 and 10?
You did.
I did. I said... probably 9.5, so I was 0.1 off.
You got text there you can read?
I can, yeah. Bigfoot is a beast of a beer brimming with bold, bittersweet malt flavor and heaps of whole cone Pacific Northwest hops. First introduced in 1983, Bigfoot is a cult classic prized by beer collectors. Drink it fresh or cellar it in a cool, dark place to taste as the flavors develop over time. I had never had this before. This is a barley wine that's been around for a long time, and it's been popular for a long time. When people think, like, quintessential barley wine, Bigfoot is one that comes to mind. And I never had it, so I'm glad I finally had it. I gave it a 3. It's so bitter.
Yeah, it's both overly bitter and overly sweet for my palate. Now, I'm sensitive to sweet. But, yeah, I guess barley wine's one of those styles that I just have never enjoyed, which is why I was a little bit glad I wasn't on that 100th episode of yours.
Oh, did you listen to that?
I did listen to it. It was. I mean, it was entertaining to listen to.
Got crazy.
It was entertaining to listen to, but you know, it's just not my style.
But you know, honestly, for a while I entertained giving this beer a 4 because of the flavors I was getting off my first few tastes.
Yeah, for you, you definitely had a little bit of a journey on that beer where you just were much higher on it, and then it just kind of slowly went down. Actually, I was thinking you were going to go much higher, and then you started talking all these bad notes right at the very end on it.
And that's why it's kind of important that we continue to sip on the beers, because your first sip or two can be really nice or really bad, and then as you keep going, it changes. It gets better or it gets worse. Happens all the time.
Sometimes I wonder about that when you're drinking a whole beer, like an entire 12 ounces, and your journey changes throughout like the beginning, the middle, of the end of the beer, at what point is it fair to assess it? You know, mm-hmm. like, is it only fair to assess it after you drink the whole thing?
Right.
Because a lot of times your experience changes.
Yeah.
As it warms up, as your tongue gets more and more of it on it, and you might get like a building on it. I honestly don't know the answer to that question. Like, when is it fair to judge it?
Well, and I'll be honest, there have actually been times I do that, those Brutal Battle beer breaks, which are, you know, short videos I put on YouTube where I'm reviewing a beer that I'm drinking in my off time from the podcast. Then it'll just be like 5 minutes or less, and I'll just be like, okay, here's this beer that I'm trying. And then I, you know, pour it, talk about the color, the aroma, and then the taste, and I say I like it or I don't like it. There have honestly been times where I've done episodes, I said something about a beer, and then I was done with the episode, I posted it and everything, and I kept sipping on the beer, and I was like, yeah, I screwed up on that. Because the more I kept tasting it, it either went up or down. And I think my prime example, you can go watch it, it's on YouTube, just search Brutal Battle Beer Break, it'll come up. I think my prime example was Lost Abbey's Saint's Devotion,
mm-hmm.
which was like a hoppy beer with Brettanomyces added.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't big on it at first, but as it kept warming up and I kept drinking it, it really grew on me. And I felt that I didn't properly assess it in the video. But I posted it anyway because I was like, that was my first impression. That's what it was.
Well, it's funny. It's
like, I almost scrapped that episode, though. I almost scrapped it.
Well, it's funny. It's like if a beer gets worse in that circumstance, then you feel like maybe I was a fool. But if the beer gets better, then you're like, well, maybe I was a fool and I kind of screwed this beer that shit deserves better.
It made me feel like much worse than the instances where I was like, this is a pretty good beer, and then it gets worse as I drink it.
Yeah. Because you feel like you're screwing yourself and the beer.
Yeah. 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 So anyway, yet another interesting episode. Was this one okay for you? Probably it wasn't our favorite.
Well, the talking was better than the beer, but
yeah,
the talking was good.
Yeah, no, true. And that's the thing. When you come on this episode, you never know what you're going to get. And Rebecca, I mean, when she goes and picks out the beers, she never knows what they're going to be like. You know, a lot of the time she's picking out beers that she's never had herself. She doesn't know anything about. It's just like, this looks interesting. Just mm-hmm. grabs a beer. Could be great. Could be terrible. Mm-hmm. Never know. Or in between. So.
And it's another example of, we were talking about Sierra Nevada before, and it's another example of Sierra Nevada doing different interesting things that people don't usually associate with them.
Well, not really, because the Bigfoot is, like I said, like one of the quintessential barley wines.
All right, fine.
It's been around for a long time, I'm just saying.
Ignore the last 10 seconds of what I said.
Just erase that in your mind. Anyway, thank you very much, Dan, for being here. I appreciate you donating your time to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's always a blast.
The free beer helps too, right?
Yeah.
You had to think about that a little bit. Most people would be like, yes.
Well, I was debating whether to pay you a compliment or not, and I decided not to. So.
Okay, well, that's fine. That doesn't bother me at all. You can pay me the compliment off podcast. Well, we still have some of this pig porter here from Right Brain to drink a little bit of, and we'll finish that off. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I was talking about the Brutal Battle Beer Breaks on YouTube. Go ahead and check those out. But you can also check out past episodes, go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, or just the website, brutalbattle.com. Send me correspondence if you want at brutalbattlepodcast@gmail.com. I'm on Untappd. I'm just look for Carlin Cook or Carlton Malibu, all one word. I'm on there that way as well. You can find me on Twitter at Brutal Battle. And on Facebook, just go to facebook.com/brutalbattle. So, that was a lot of stuff.
That was a lot of stuff.
That was a lot of stuff. Dan looks exhausted from just listening to it. So, thank you so much. We'll wrap it up there. And please,
keep it brutal.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.